You're listening to Sweat, Snot and Tears, brought to you by Netmums. I'm Annie O'Leary.
And I'm Wendy Gollidge. And together we talk about all of this week's sweaty, snotty and tearful parenting moments.
With guests who are far more interesting than we are.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Sweat, Snot and Tears. But it's a special one today because we've got our favourite guy back with us. Dr. Rand, say hi to everyone.
Hello, everyone.
Good. Now, we're here because we're going to talk about something quite serious.
Yes.
Something not as light-hearted as we normally do. We want to talk COVID vaccines, but specifically we want to talk COVID vaccines for kids.
Yes.
Because there's been an announcement from the government about COVID vaccines for kids, but it feels quite small scale. And we know you're all in a frenzy in the forum saying, why can't my child have it? Or I would never let my child have it. So we want to talk to Dr. Ange. Bust some of the myths and find out what's actually going on.
Okay.
So first up, please can you outline for us in simple words, because Wendy and I aren't the smartest, can you outline for us what the announcement said?
Yes. So the situation regarding COVID vaccines is changing all the time, as you know. It's a dynamic thing. We're learning as we go along. The advice is changing as we go along. That's not because we have got stuff wrong. That's just hopefully that we are getting stuff more and more right as we go along. So the latest announcement is that there is a recommendation that children between the ages of 12 to 15 should be vaccinated with a COVID vaccine, and it will be the Pfizer one or one of the mRNA ones, if they are at higher risk of COVID because of specific conditions or situations. For example, if they've got severe neurodisability, which includes cerebral palsy, autism, epilepsy, if they've got Down syndrome, if they have a severely weakened immune system, which includes some children with cancer, or if they've got profound and multiple learning difficulties. Those who are at higher risk, who are 16 and 17, can already be vaccinated under the existing rules. And if your child is approaching 18, if they're within 3 months of turning 18, then they should also be offered the jab as well. So the JCVI, which is the organisation, the body that sort of makes recommendations on who should be vaccinated and when, has also recommended immunising any 12 to 17 year olds who live with someone who's got a suppressed immune system as a form of indirect protection for that person as well. It is confusing. And like I say, the sort of goalposts seem to keep changing. But the reason that happens is because we are very much learning more and more about COVID and about vaccination as we go along. And therefore, the guidance has to change.
And can I ask, should parents wait to be called for these vaccines? So if you have a 13-year-old who you believe comes under the list of what you've just classed as vulnerable, should you be contacting your GP? Or will they contact you? Because I know that as adults, there's been some confusion around that and whether you're going to get your letter or a text. So how does it work for kids?
In very simple terms, we don't know.
Honesty is the best policy, Dr.
I'll be perfectly honest with you. So in a perfect world, in a perfect system, your GP surgery should contact you and say that your child, or wherever your child is registered, is due a vaccination. However, we know that GP surgeries are currently swamped with all sorts of stuff, trying to do vaccinations as well as catching up on everything else. So there may be a bit of a delay in that system. If you haven't heard, I would say within the next month or so, I would definitely be getting in touch with them and saying, look, apparently my child falls into this at-risk group. I'd like them to be vaccinated. If they qualify, would you be able to offer a vaccine? I'm not sure as yet as to whether those children are allowed to go to the walk-in centres. We're not quite clear on that just yet, or exactly where they would be vaccinated. But that sort of information usually is out on social media, or it's on the gov.uk website or the nhs.uk website, usually. But like I said, we're all kind of waiting for the information to trickle down ourselves as well. It's only just been announced.
Okay, can I hit you up with a tricky question straight off the bat? Okay?
You can try.
I have been in the Netmums forums prepping for this, what I want to know is what are real people asking about this? What do they want to know?
Yeah.
And something you said when you're explaining who the vaccine covers and everything,
yeah,
will be a trigger for them. Because yeah. one of the things I'm hearing them say is, it feels too new, feels like everyone's learning as they go along. I don't want to give something to my child
yeah.
that's not based on, you know, science that's been around for decades. This sounds like everyone's just making it up as they go along.
Yeah, yeah.
What can we say to allay those people's fears?
You could be absolutely forgiven for feeling like that, for feeling like everything's a bit of a rush and maybe it's all a bit brand new and uncertain and that people don't know what they're doing. If I can reassure people in any way, the technology in which these vaccines is based has been around for a very long time. This is not brand new technology. We're just using it in a slightly different way. Remember, worldwide, millions upon millions upon millions of doses have been administered. That never happens in a real situation, in a normal situation. Normally, it would take years and years for that to happen. And if I can reassure anyone, the vast majority of significant side effects usually happen within the first few months. So we've got through that period now. We know that all people of all age groups and backgrounds and situations have been vaccinated, including pregnant people, including children in some countries. And the big signal that we're getting is that these vaccines, for the vast majority of people, are safe. And what you've got to do, it is a risk. Remember, you know, with any new medicine, with any medicine you give your child, there is a potential that they could have a side effect. But what you've got to do is weigh up the risks of those side effects with the risks of COVID itself, which you could argue for children are quite low, actually. But then let's add to that the risk of long COVID, which is a bit more of a significant situation. Add to that the risk of passing it around to other vulnerable people. Bit more risk involved there. Add to that, on top of that, that the more we allow the infection to exist naturally, the more we allow the virus to infect lots of people, the more chances we have of a new variant emerging. For variants to develop, the virus has to infect people. It can't just develop into a new variant whilst it's just sitting there.
Well, and we've already seen that with Delta, haven't we? Like,
exactly.
Delta is already way more transmittable,
yes.
which is scary.
Yes.
But also, I think actually with particular reference to kids, correct me if I'm wrong, it makes people more likely to be symptomatic than asymptomatic. Mm.
Yeah, and the symptoms it may cause are slightly different, we
yes,
think,
yes,
to the classic variants that we've had. So this is the problem with new variants. Every time a new variant emerges, we've almost got to catch up with it and try and work out.
Learn it all over again.
Learn them a lot about it. Not everything, but yeah, you're absolutely right. Learn a lot about it. And anything we can do to keep new variants at bay is an important thing. The problem is with vaccinating children, and I totally understand why people get very heated up about this and very worried, is that the risk to children from COVID is actually quite low. And I'm not saying that children haven't got sick. Some children have got really poorly and had long-term problems. We've got to acknowledge that. And we've also got to acknowledge that there are a whole group of vulnerable, shielding children out there that haven't been allowed out, that have no exit strategy back to normal life because their peers aren't being vaccinated. So we've got to take all of this into consideration when we're deciding whether we should routinely offer children a vaccine. We've got to weigh up those risks against the greater risks to society from COVID as well. And the fact that, you know, children and young people have a part to play. And the difficult balance has been that the risk from vaccinating versus the risk from COVID and COVID related stuff is a really tricky balance for kids. And the margins are much, much smaller, which is why it takes a lot longer to make that decision. And it has done so far. This is likely to be a changing situation. We may be recommending more vaccination. I'm glad that we are vaccinating the vulnerable. That is really, really important because they have been forgotten.
Well, that was going to be my next question. Why isn't it for all over 12s? In fact, why for over 12s? Why
yeah,
not every
absolutely.
12?
Yeah.
The reason for over 12s is that there has already been some research into vaccinating 12s and aboves. So before ploughing just into vaccinating children, there were studies done looking at whether it was something that was going to be effective and worthwhile doing.
And what did they show, those trials, if anything?
They were generally done in children from the age of 12, and it's shown that vaccination is effective in that group. So the reason we've gone for the vulnerable, the most vulnerable individuals, first of all, is because to them, the risks of COVID are so much higher. And therefore, they outweigh any risks from vaccinating, as it were. Because vaccination carries a risk of side effects and potential adverse effects. They're very low, but when your risks of COVID are very low and the risks of the vaccine are very low, they match each other. And it almost seems that, well, what's the point in vaccinating?
They cancel
each other out. But if the risks of COVID go up significantly, so for example, if we get another surge, if we get a new variant that's much more severe, or if for some weird reason children become more vulnerable, then the risks of COVID get higher, and therefore we may end up actually vaccinating more people. But whilst levels of COVID are quite low at the moment, currently, relatively speaking, I'm saying this, and it's not resulting in huge numbers going into hospital, then actually the risks of COVID to those young people are relatively low for now, but that could change in future. That's why I say it's a dynamic situation. People always say, oh, 2 months ago you weren't recommending this. And I was like, well, 2 months ago we were in a very different situation.
Okay, so I think you've just raised a really crucial point, which is we have to see this as a dynamic and changing situation. Just because we're saying only over 12s now doesn't mean, oh my God, it's not safe for under 12s. It's never going to be safe for them. No. Blah. It just means no one else needs it right now.
Or it doesn't mean we don't care about under 12s.
Exactly.
Either.
It just means the over 12s need it right now.
Yeah.
Who are vulnerable.
Yes.
So they're the ones who are going to get it. But we'll keep assessing the situation. And as and when that changes, we may well have new guidance.
Absolutely.
Because Joe Biden's gone the other way, hasn't he? America is going to give all children, am I right?
Yeah.
All children will be vaccinated this autumn.
Yeah, that's what he said today.
So different countries have got different strategies depending on their local needs, depending on their country's health strategy, depending on how they see risk. And actually also, depending on what the population want, remember, they're a different group of people in a different situation. Just because one country is doing it one way doesn't necessarily mean we all do it in exactly the same way. It's as you said, Annie, it's a dynamic situation, and it's something that we are going to change as we go along, depending on what is happening.
Can I take you back to something you mentioned in passing? And I know Annie's going to want the answer to this because her son had COVID a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
I've never been, as a parent, especially worried about my children getting COVID, but I'm becoming increasingly worried about long COVID. And
yes.
As a parent, it feels scarily unknown because you don't know how... Atty got ill with COVID, didn't he, Annie?
Yeah,
but not very ill.
He was in bed ill, which is unlike him. Yeah, it was not very nice.
And
yeah.
So, again, dynamic situation. You don't know everything, despite the fact we'd like to think you do. How does this work with long COVID in kids? Because I think a lot of parents are really worried about it.
Yeah, yeah. So... long COVID is an emerging phenomenon that we are watching very, very closely. And actually, very recently, a huge amount of money has just been announced to research identification and treatment strategies. Long COVID is a term we use to describe prolonged symptoms after COVID infection. And there's two phases of it. There's like the first 4 weeks is your acute COVID. That's your COVID infection. That's your first 4 weeks of illness. From 4 to 12 weeks, we have long COVID type 1, if you want to call it. And that's ongoing symptoms during that time. That's like a prolonged acute phase. And then from 12 week onwards, you have the post-viral, post-COVID phase. And what we do know about this so far is that there are millions of people potentially around the country, including children and young people, who are affected. That's not to say that everybody is affected severely. There's a massive spectrum. There's a huge array of different symptoms that people are attributing to long COVID. May not all necessarily be long COVID. We need to remember that. And also, it doesn't necessarily mean that they're not going to get better. Many people, in fact, the majority get better. But what we're trying to do is understand why it happens and how we can treat it. And also, I think quite importantly, how we can prevent it. So we know that children are at lower risk from COVID. Therefore, less of them are going to get long COVID potentially. But if we vaccinate more people and reduce levels of infection, then if the number of people who are being infected goes down, then naturally the number of people who get long COVID will go down. by an indirect result. So this is where when we talk about vaccination and the direct benefit to the individual, I always say to people, remember, it's not just about the COVID infection itself and that initial illness. You've also got to bear in mind this possibility that you could have an ongoing illness afterwards. And for some people, that's been quite debilitating, and we don't know much about it.
The other thing I was going to say, actually, at this point is, what would you say to someone who says, well, my child already had COVID, so now they've got antibodies, they're not going to need a vaccine if it gets offered to them? What's the deal with that?
Good point. And the tricky thing about that is that antibodies are only one form of immunity. We know that. Mm. So we use antibodies. Your immune system is hugely complex, as you know, and it fights off infections in various different ways. And antibodies is one of the ways that it does it. Just because you have antibodies, let's say you've had a COVID infection, doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to be around for a very long time. We don't know how long they're going to be around for, and therefore how long they're going to protect you. Doesn't even necessarily mean that those specific antibodies that we've looked at are the ones that are going to protect you. So there's a lot of uncertainty. And that's why I think as a blanket policy, we're saying just to be on the safe side, belt and braces, let's vaccinate people. It's much easier than testing them, waiting for a result, then deciding whether we should vaccinate them, but then not really knowing whether those antibodies are going to protect them enough or whether they're the right kind. Whereas we do know with some relative certainty that when you vaccinate people, it does protect them. In fact, we're seeing it right now. We're seeing that people who are vaccinated, particularly people who are double vaccinated, aren't getting that sick and aren't ending up in hospital and aren't dying from COVID, unlike we had in previous waves where we didn't have vaccination.
Well, exactly. If we had rates like we have today,
yes.
last summer, the hospitalisation would have been significantly larger than it is today.
We wouldn't have been, exactly. And also, if we had vaccinations last summer, we wouldn't have gone into lockdown. The only reason we went into lockdown was to curb that flow of patients into hospital because it was potentially going to become unmanageable. And that's why lockdown happens, is to stop people flooding into hospitals. And that's why I say to people, if you don't want any more lockdowns, and lockdowns are harmful for so many reasons, but they are a last resort. And speaking from the front line, I get why they're a last resort, because it's pretty horrendous when you've got a patient coming in every minute with COVID who needs intensive care. That's what they were designed to slow down. And the vaccinations are working. Lockdown did that for a bit until we got enough people vaccinated, and I'm praying and touching wood and everything else I've got that we don't ever have to go into another lockdown.
I really don't want to. I don't think my sanity would take it, Dr. Ranch, with all the homeschooling.
I think everybody listening might agree with you there.
Yeah.
Can we just get talking about the schools thing and really all of us not wanting to go back to another lockdown situation if we can help it? Can I bring up Joe Biden again, please? Because and that's something else interesting he said today when talking about kids and COVID, was he expects all school children, if they're not vaccinated, to have to wear masks.
Yeah.
Why are our kids wearing masks at school, Dr.
So the evidence around masks is, I mean, depends what you look at as to whether that it shows it's effective or how effective it is or whether it's pointless. The rationale behind masks, and I know the advice on masks changed during the course of the pandemic because the situation changed. The rationale behind masks is that they trap droplets. Okay, that's what they do. They don't filter virus. They don't filter the air you breathe in and out. They don't necessarily protect you as much as they protect those around you. But what they're designed to do is act as a barrier for droplets. And we know that the virus, COVID, can be carried in droplets that we breathe out. And therefore, anything we do to trap some of that reduces transmission. And that's the idea behind them. But the thing about masks is it's a group responsibility. It's not just about protecting yourself, because they only do that to a limited extent. It's more about protecting those around you. So it's having a bit more of a responsibility to those around you. So I kind of understand the logic behind asking children and young people to wear masks where they may not have immunity to COVID and therefore may be able to get COVID and potentially pass it around without even realizing. It's another tool in our armory. It's not the only tool. It's not the best tool. But when you're dealing with small numbers, every little counts sometimes. And that's why I think even though masks have their disadvantages, remember, you know, kids and young people need to see faces. You know, it's really, really important for their development, for socialising and all of that kind of stuff, their mental well-being included. But remember, we're trying to mitigate the risks of COVID as much as we possibly can. So I always say use every tool we've got because we need to get out of this.
Well, that brings me on because really interestingly, where I live, I've been out a couple of times since, so say, Freedom Day. Mm. Nobody isn't wearing a mask. Nothing has changed. All the shops, everyone's still got masks. Yeah. Yeah. But you got quite a lot of stick for wearing your mask. Was it at the Euros?
Yes, it was, yeah. So
first of all, how did you get tickets for the Euros? And secondly...
and why didn't you take us?
but you wore your transparent mask, which I think is a really good idea, if a bit freaky.
But particularly for kids, because if we do want kids to wear them at some point, the clear one surely would be a really great option.
And you got properly roasted for it, didn't you?
I did. And I got a majority positive reaction and then a small amount of negative reaction. Okay. Because everything COVID-related and mask-related is quite polarising at the moment.
Yeah.
So there's a difference between face masks and face coverings and face shields. So I was wearing a transparent face shield. The reason I was at the football is because I was taken as a gift from a magazine that I work with. They work with Volkswagen, who sponsor the games.
Lucky boy.
And so they asked me, would you like to go? And I said, of course. Like, you'd be an idiot to turn that down.
Too right.
And technically, because the match was outside, you don't have to wear masks because it's outside. But there was a lot of people in a specific space and I felt more comfortable wearing a shield. And the reason I chose a clear shield is because of late, I've been very conscious of how people communicate and the fact that deaf people and people who are hard of hearing can't hear me. And I realised this myself when we started wearing masks that I couldn't hear anyone because I lip read a lot. I don't think I'm specifically hard of hearing, but I didn't realise I lip read so much. So for me, it was the mask was a gift from a company. It wasn't an ad. I wasn't paid to do this, as some people were saying. I thought it was a fantastic idea. And I was like, this is great. I love this mask. It's great for people who are hard of hearing or have communication difficulties. It's a face shield. So it is going to block the spread of droplets to some extent. I feel more comfortable in this situation wearing this mask. You didn't have to technically, but I felt more comfortable wearing that shield. I wanted to highlight the needs of hard of hearing and deaf people as well. And I wanted to say thank you to this company because it was a lovely thing for them to do. And off the back of that, so many people got in touch saying, I really wish I had these for my school, for my children, for my parents with dementia who struggle to communicate. You know, thank you for highlighting this for the hard of hearing and deaf community. I work with a deaf doctor in my department. We have specific clear masks that have been approved for our trust to use when she is on shift. It is a life changer for hard of hearing people.
Well, yeah, and for kids, when you're treating kids as well, a kid will want to see your face.
Makes a massive difference to me in my line of work where I'm dealing with vulnerable and terrified young children. To be able to see my face makes a huge difference. It really, really
Absolutely.
Does.
Absolutely. I'm so with you on that. I'm so with you on that. So, seeing as we're talking about over 12s at the moment, are the ones who will be eligible if they're vulnerable.
Yes.
What would you say to a teen in that category who said, I don't want it, I'm scared? Because it's not just parents we're talking about at that age, is it? It's the child and the teen themselves.
The interesting thing is that most young people are pretty pro-vaccine and are pretty good about it.
That's good to know.
I totally understand why people might be scared and why people might be a little bit hesitant. That's completely understandable. But remember that so many people around you, millions across the world, have been vaccinated and have been absolutely fine. Remember that vaccination isn't just about protecting you. It's also about protecting those around you, your friends, your family. So I've been vaccinated. I wouldn't hesitate being vaccinated again. My family have been vaccinated. My colleagues at work have been vaccinated. It is a huge weight off your shoulder to some extent. Once you've got it done, you still have to exercise precautions, but it is something that we all do together for each other and not just ourselves. And I think young people and children really buy into that. The social responsibility
do.
They get it. They are decent people. They haven't been jaded by society. You know, they come into this world and they're usually quite pure and they have decent intentions and they want to do the right thing. And I think because of that, it fills me with hope that young people actually might do the decent thing in future and be better than we are.
Well, yeah, my kids are a lot smarter than I am. That's for sure. Now, actually, do you know one of the things I desperately wanted to ask you is, what's the most ridiculous anti-vaccine comment you've had in real life?
Oh, gosh. Well, we've all heard the conspiracies, haven't we?
Well, yeah.
A lot of them are just nonsense. The whole 5G thing, complete and utter nonsense. Yeah. You just got to remind people that if anyone wanted to track you, they could do it through your phone, couldn't they? Quite easily. There's a tracking device right there, but you're more than happy to use that. The fact that, you know, the vaccines make you magnetic, that was nonsense. Absolute nonsense.
I haven't heard that one.
Yes.
Ladies and gents, I'm standing next to some metal now. I've been vaccinated. I'm not magnetic, I'm afraid.
Did you hear about Sarah? No, it wasn't Sarah Gill, but it was Catherine, the other lady who designed the vaccine. You know, they've written a book.
Yes, they have. It's just come out. Yeah.
And it's being serialised on Radio 4 for anyone who wants
Fantastic.
To listen to it. It's brilliant.
And yes. In the book, Catherine was saying that last summer, in that brief period where it opened up and we could all go on staycation, she went camping with her daughter and she was stood in the queue for the pizza and she could hear these two women in front of her saying, well, these vaccines, they do this and this and this. And she said she's a really non-confrontational. And she just kind of tapped them on the shoulder and said, excuse me, I can tell you for 100% fact that this is not true because I made it. Can you imagine how wonderful it would be to have seen that?
It's a mic drop moment, isn't it?
It's a proper mic drop.
But this is the thing. There's so much online that is being reported as true, that's being reported as fact, which absolutely isn't. The most recent thing, and I think we should probably talk about it, is people who've had the vaccine and developed very strange neurological symptoms. They're unable to walk.
That was on my list to ask you.
Yes. So this is the latest viral thing that's happening.
Yes, I've seen it.
Forgive my use of the term viral then. I meant it socially viral.
You can't say the words viral or ping for anything.
You can't. So this is a really interesting phenomenon. And it's something called functional neurological disorder, which is nothing to do with vaccines at all. These are people who are susceptible to these symptoms regardless of what happens, especially when they're stressed, they're acutely anxious and they're worried. This and a trigger event happens, it can tip them over into this. And actually, several international neurological bodies have come out and said this. Look, this is not a vaccine reaction. This is a separate condition called functional neurological disorder. It is a condition in its own right that warrants its own treatment. It's really complex. But please don't start putting this down to the vaccine. Sure, the vaccine may have been temporarily associated with the onset of your symptoms, but that doesn't mean it caused them at all. And that's the same goes for a lot of people in the forums will be saying, well, what about the adverse event reporting system, the yellow card scheme? You know, go on there. There's 200,000 things that people have reported. I mean, if you get run over by a bus after you've had your vaccine, you could theoretically report that as a vaccine side effect, as an adverse event. Yeah. And people do. Yeah. If you look through it, there's somebody who broke their clavicle. There's somebody who fell down the stairs. There's all sorts of stuff that you can put on the yellow card scheme because it doesn't differentiate causality. All it says is if you had any adverse event after any vaccine, you can submit it. So if your hair turned orange because you dyed it and you happened to have your vaccine the day before, you can report it. That doesn't mean the vaccine caused it. And that's what people don't realise. It's an association. It's not a causation. Then when there's a pattern, which is what happened when we started seeing, for example, certain people developing a rare type of blood clot, then it gets investigated. But everything else, the vast majority of stuff that is on that yellow card scheme is nothing to do with the vaccines. Those people that have developed these weird and wonderful neurological symptoms of functional neurological disorder having happened to have been vaccinated. Remember, millions of people have been vaccinated. Someone's going to develop something that may not be related to the vaccine whatsoever. And I think that's what we've got to bear in mind. Everything we know worldwide says that for the vast majority of people, these vaccines are safe compared to the risks of COVID.
Okay. I'm actually going to jump to the last question now, because you have addressed so much, including that one that I was researching.
Yeah,
too,
yeah.
Which seems to be the really hot topic at the
Absolutely.
Moment. Absolutely. But okay, this is the last question, right? You've got 60 seconds.
Ooh.
Tell us why vaccinating kids, once the vaccines are licensed, and if we decide it's necessary as a nation,
yeah.
is a good idea. Go, Dr. Range.
Vaccination, if you look throughout history, is one of the best medical interventions we have had. Just look through history at the incidence of serious infections like meningitis and the fact that they went down after vaccinations were introduced. It is one of the best tools we have currently in the fight against COVID. It is not the only tool. And we've got to remember that any potential medical intervention has side effects. But when you look at the bigger picture, look at the risks from COVID and COVID-related issues and weigh that up against the risk of vaccination, I think most people will agree that taking up the offer of vaccination, and it is voluntary, is a good idea, not just for yourself, but for everybody around you. This is about protecting everyone, and no one is safe until everyone is safe.
God, you're good.
I love that, Dr. Range. You're amazing, and that's why we love having you on our show. Thank you so much.
Stick him on the spot and off he goes.
Thank you so much for answering all those questions today. I think you'll have calmed a lot of people down and kind of really cut through a lot of the, can I say the word crap on my own podcast? I think I can.
Oh, thank you.
Right, go and save some lives, please.
Thank you very much.
Have a great day, Dr. Range.
Thanks, bye.